This is WX1DER, Daryl, net control for the Scotland Hurricane Prep. At this time, I'm going to turn it over to Rob, KD1CY, for the training presentation on winter storms and winter weather safety. They also do have this on the, it's in PDF format. Rob Raleigh will give the URL where it is available. We can get it. Very nice presentation that he has coming up for it. So after the presentation, there will be an opportunity. Rob will turn it over and ask for questions. And then after that, we'll do one other call for check-ins. But this time, this is WX1DER turning over to KD1CY for the training presentation on the Skyward Hurricane PrepNet. This is WX1DER. Over to you, Rob.
Okay, very good, Daryl. And if I've got the list of text box check-ins, we'll give that at the end. And I see Gary from Salem, South Carolina. We got him on this list. I'll let you pick up the text box. We can take text box check-ins while we're conducting the presentation, and Daryl will pick up the text box while I'm giving the presentation. For those that don't know where the presentation is located, if you go to boipwx.net, the first story there, there is a link to the PDF document, and that's with Adobe Reader, which is a free software package. So we put the PowerPoint in that format so folks can access it without having to purchase any software. So with that, we'll get into tonight's presentation on winter storms of this past month and some winter weather safety tips, as it's looking like a pretty active month of February, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well. And certainly, with it being a VOIP Hurricane Prep Net, we are going to have a quick slide on a new product at the Hurricane Center will now be utilizing during the upcoming hurricane season. So with that, we'll have the title slide. We will move on to slide number two of the PowerPoint or PDF package. Break for more. Okay, on slide number two, we're going to go through some topics. We're going to talk about a blizzard that we had up here in southeastern Massachusetts that also affected other parts of the northeast U.S. and New England states. What a way to kick off the new year. And discuss the near blizzard that we had on January 21st, 22nd, also up here in the northeast U.S. and New England region. Many folks may have heard the term polar vortex. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about that. It's actually not a new term, although very new to kind of a more public arena of folks. So we'll explain what that's all about. And certainly we'll talk about this past winter storm that affected especially the southeastern part of the United States with an unusual amount of snow for their area and some of the problems that that created, both on the fact of having issues being able to actually treat the roadways and the timing of the precipitation as it got into some of the areas. We'll talk about how to measure snow and ice, because that could be very helpful. Certainly, it's common up here in the northern parts of the area, not so common in the south. We'll talk a little bit about that because that will be helpful, especially to those southern Weather Service offices. We'll talk about situational awareness, disaster intelligence information, and certainly the snow and ice measurements are a part of that, along with other information that could be going on that the weather may be impacting, especially winter weather, in the southeast U.S. We'll talk winter weather safety tips, a little bit about the active winter weather pattern upcoming, and then, as I mentioned, we'll talk about the new storm surge map product for hurricanes that the Hurricane Center announced this week, because it makes sense for the Hurricane Prep Net to talk a little bit about hurricanes even at this early part of the year outside of hurricane season. Break for more. And this is KD1CY for the VOIP Hurricane Net training topic on winter storms. We're on slide number three for those following along the presentation. So we did officially have a blizzard in southeastern Massachusetts January 2nd and 3rd, 2014, with a coastal storm, or as we call up here in the northeast, the nor'easter, that tracked to around that benchmark location, which we call 40 North, 70 West, and that's about 100 miles south of Nantucket Island. When we have tropical systems tracked there, we're smiling, and maybe we've got some rain coming, maybe even heavy rain in southeast New England, but the damaging aspect of the storm is likely going to stay offshore. It's not true with nor'easters, where we're actually going to get into the heavy snow and have very strong to potentially damaging winds. This storm did indeed bring the heaviest snow to eastern New England and portions of Connecticut, with a widespread snowfall of 7 to 14 inches. Higher amounts were recorded of 18 to 24 inches in parts of the North Shore of Massachusetts, where we had a narrow band of what we call ocean-effect snow, very much like lake-effect snow in the Great Lakes areas, where you'll get these persistent bands that set up, and they can be very localized. You can have parts of towns that have these higher totals and other parts of towns that have less. They are very narrow and can have a sharp cutoff. And we certainly had some of that up in the North Shore during the storm. We had several episodes of moderate coastal flooding, with the last high tide on that Friday, January 3rd, producing widespread, moderate, isolated pockets of major coastal flooding along our north and east-facing coastlines of east coastal Massachusetts. Break for more. Continuing on slide number three, for those following along the presentation, this blizzard produced wind gusts as high as 50 to 64 miles per hour across east coastal Massachusetts, Cape Cod, and Nantucket Island. We had multiple wind gusts in Hyannis, Massachusetts, on Cape Cod of both 64 and 60 miles per hour, as measured by two amateur radio Skywarn weather spotters in Hyannis. One of the weather stations is actually located at the Cape Cod Hospital. Some very strong wind gusts, though not as strong as last year, where we had the major blizzard that affected our area a year ago this coming weekend. That storm had hurricane-force wind gusts. It also had a much heavier and wetter snow versus the lighter, drier snow that we had with this particular blizzard. That wet snow and hurricane-force winds with the blizzard of February 2013 caused significant tree and wire damage and power outages, both in Rhode Island and southeast Massachusetts. With this blizzard, we did not get that damaging component. Some isolated damage reports from the wind, but the real damaging aspect was just simply from the coastal flooding itself. And we did hit blizzard criteria in portions of the blizzard warning area, but in the southeast part of the warning area. Parts of the North Shore were under the blizzard warning. They did not meet that criteria. But in southeast Mass, we did hit that criteria. And I'll speak more on the criteria in a moment. Break for more. KD1CY continuing on slide number three. The definition of a blizzard, the strict definition, is falling and or blowing snow, reducing visibility to below a quarter mile, along with winds that frequently gust to 35 miles per hour or more that are predominant over a three consecutive hour period. For this blizzard, the National Weather Service in Taunton, Massachusetts, which is responsible for this, for our area up here, diagnosed that there were blizzard criteria definitions met in Hyannis, Marshfield, Falmouth, and Nantucket, Massachusetts, via the Automated Surface Observing Stations, or ASOS reports. They did use visibilities that were at a quarter mile. They did count those, given that it is low for an automated visibility sensor to detect. So that is how this storm was classified as a blizzard for southeast Massachusetts. Break for more. This is KD1CY, continuing with the VOIP Hurricane PrepNet training topic on winter storms. Moving on to slide number four, these are some of the pictures of the coastal flooding along parts of east coastal Massachusetts and Cape Cod. One report in the top left-hand corner, that picture, was actually from a non-ham who knows a ham operator and relayed pictures because she lives right near the coastal flood area. And she was able to safely take that picture. On the top right-hand corner, WQ10 Frank, who is our Aries District Emergency Coordinator for Cape Cod, Massachusetts, was embedded with personnel from Sandwich Emergency Management, who were instrumental in many of the reports of coastal flooding in Sandwich, which was one of the hardest hit areas. The bottom two pictures are from Jeff Simpson, who is a firefighter in the town of Marshfield that will becoming Skywarn spotter trained soon, and got us a couple of very good pictures of significant coastal flooding in the town of Marshfield, Mass. And this will happen with some of our bigger nor'easter blizzards in these towns where we will get this type of coastal flooding. Break for more. Continuing with slide number five, continuing on with the blizzard pictures, some pictures of the snowfall from Ed, KA1RSY, and who's at WA1EMA tonight, and Tony, N1XRS, both from New Bedford, where Ed was located, and Taunton, where Tony was located. And then on the bottom pictures are shots from the Sandwich, Massachusetts EOC, as provided by WQ10 Frank. You can see the situational room area and the ham station at the Sandwich EOC, which we had constant communications with throughout the storm. And we also ran many of the Aerie Skywarn nets on the Cape Cod repeater, including nets through the overnight hours. And they are a very dedicated group, and we couldn't have done this particular activation or a lot of the activations on the Cape without their support. Break for more. And this is KD1CY continuing on slide number 6, which is showing the January 21st, 22nd near blizzard that was affecting us, affecting the southeast New England area. This storm had similar impact to the early January storm, with some exceptions. The track was a little bit further south, which meant a little bit less strength on the winds, heavier snow a bit further southeast into southeast Massachusetts, and conditions that fell just short of blizzard conditions. Also, astronomical high tides were not as high, and the wind direction was more northerly, which prevented a more significant coastal flood episode than what we saw earlier in the month. A widespread snowfall of 6 to 12 inches occurred in southeast Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and northeast Connecticut, with a heavier band, again, with that ocean effect that we talked about previously, of 12 to 18 inches of snow in parts of southeast coastal Massachusetts, Brockton, Weymouth, Plymouth, Mass area, all kind of in that 12 to 18-inch range of snow. There was also a very sharp cutoff with this snowfall. As you got up into Boston and the North Shore, amounts dropped down to about 2 to 5 inches, but just 15 or 20 miles south of that, and you were well over 6 inches and even over 12 inches in that enhanced band in southeast Mass. And that's what can happen with these storms. As I mentioned, we didn't hit blizzard conditions. We hit near blizzard conditions, and that the conditions for the 35-mile-per-hour gusts and visibility only happened for a two-hour period versus a three-hour period, and that was over in Falmouth and Marshfield, some of the same locations as before. Nantucket Island as well was in that category. Break for more. This is KD1CY for the VOIP net. Moving on to slide number 7, this is the actual pictures. The pictures of from this storm, W1PRO in Marshfield, with a collage of snow measurement, conditions outside his house, and temperature reading. N1KMM Rick in Walpole, Mass., reporting his snowfall measurement, as well as Josh in Woodstock, Connecticut. And you're seeing how folks are measuring the snow. As you can see, doesn't a yardstick, a ruler, a tape measure, anything that can easily measure the snow is all that you need in terms of the device. And we'll talk a little bit more later about how to properly take these measurements. Break for more. And this is KD1CY continuing. Let's talk a little bit about the polar vortex on slide number 8. So as I mentioned, this is not a new phenomenon or a new meteorological term. It refers to a large-scale cyclone that is typically located near Baffin Island in our hemisphere, and then there is a second vortex typically located over Siberia. And when this vortex is strong, the cold air kind of stays locked up in the northern polar regions, and we stay more mild in our area. When the polar vortex weakens, it allows the cold Arctic air to dive into the air, into our region, and sometimes dive further south into the southeast United States area. And that's what we've seen a couple of times in this past month. And this can play a role in how winter weather can develop in the deep south. Although it is rare, it can occur. It is not. It can be unusual, but not unprecedented. Break for more. And this is KD1CY on to slide number 9. So now let's talk about the southeast part of the United States. We've talked quite a bit about our area here in New England. Let's talk about this recent storm of Tuesday, January 28th, and Wednesday, January 29th. This was a major winter storm for the southeast United States caused by cold air diving deep into the U.S. and a coastal storm system forming in the Gulf of Mexico, and it would actually track up towards New England, but it would stay the furthest offshore of the three storms of the month. So we did get grazed by it in parts of Cape Cod and the islands, and right along here in the New Bedford area. There was basically a 2 to 7 inch snowfall that fell Wednesday morning, the 29th, from the same storm that affected the southeast U.S. So a decent snow here, but certainly something that was manageable. It did fall on the morning commute, which did make for a slow go in the morning commute, but by 9:10 a.m. as the commute waned, the snow ended and allowed conditions to improve quite quickly. And, you know, again, we are quick to kind of handle this up here. This major winter storm did cause significant issues across the southeast U.S. with a trace to as much as 3 and even 4 inches of a combination of snow, sleet, and freezing rain accumulation, or even higher amounts as you got up into parts of northeast North Carolina. This was aggravated by the lack of ability to treat and plow the roads because of, you know, not being equipped to be able to do these things. The timing of the storm and how people were released when the storm hit could help or hurt. And as everyone knows, or a lot of folks know, Atlanta was a particular part of a particular area of scrutiny there, and we'll talk about that in the presentation. And as I mentioned, northern parts of the southeast U.S. up by North Carolina were impacted with even higher amounts than what were listed here in this slide. Break for more. And this is KD1CY for the VOIP Hurricane PrepNet presentation. We'll double-check the slide count here, but we'll continue on the presentation here on slide number 10. This is a slide that depicts what was happening in the Atlanta area and what the weather service in Atlanta was doing. So this was on January 27th, which was on the Monday, talking about the significant snow by, you know, southeast U.S. standards for the state of Georgia, including the Atlanta area, which, while it was on the fringe of getting kind of the heaviest snow from the system, was not going to escape, you know, the snowfall. And they had their winter storm watches and winter weather advisories out well ahead of the storm. The thing that the Atlanta area was initially under a winter weather advisory on the Monday evening before being upgraded by Tuesday morning to a winter storm warning. That was approximately 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. And there were a lot of briefings that the Weather Service did with emergency management and so forth. And they advised on making plans ahead of time concerning commuter traffic. And unfortunately, the timing of that was actually right as the storm really got going. And even though we're talking about this for Georgia, here in Massachusetts, parts of New England, we had a situation like this, and the amounts were more than just 1 to 3 inches of snow. They were higher amounts, 6 to 12 inches, and it was over about an 8 to maybe 10-hour window maximum. But this happened in December 2007. We had this problem here. We didn't have cars abandoned, but we had cars stuck for 5, 6, 7 hours in traffic because the timing of the snow and the timing of when people were let out led to the condition. And it was a situation where either folks needed to stay home or get home before midday or ride it out until a couple hours after the evening commute because the storm, while intense, was short-lived in that it was about an 8 to 10-hour duration. Break for more. So KD1CY continuing, this just gives you an idea that it isn't just necessarily the amount of snow, it's also the timing. If this happened during the overnight, it may give you a different effect on the public than if it's happening near a commute time or so forth, or if it's happening on a weekday or a weekend. These are other factors that aren't necessarily meteorological that play a role here. As you look on slide number 12, these all photos were courtesy of the Weather Service Peachtree, Georgia website. The cars stranded in parts of Atlanta, the traffic jam on the Interstate 75 in the top right-hand corner. Picture from central Georgia in the lower right-hand corner and kind of the octopus of highways in the right-hand corner that were quiet the day after the winter storm had hit. Break for more. And this is KD1CY continuing with the presentation on winter storms, moving on to slide number 12. This is a graphic that was prepared by the National Weather Service in New Orleans, and it gives the conditions from about a trace to a tenth inch of snow and sleet across extreme southeast Louisiana to a tenth to two-tenths of an inch to as much as 3 inches in the northeast part of their coverage area. And, you know, even trace amounts of snow and sleet that if there is not material, you know, salt or sand materials to be able to treat the roads and highways, you know, it's going to create treacherous conditions, and it can create accidents, traffic jams and such. And with, again, areas that are not equipped to handle this, it's a bigger deal. We are more equipped to handle it here. Even with that, there needs to be, you know, attention paid to timing and keeping those that don't need to travel off the roads. And that all has to be considered. Looking at slide number 13, this was in parts of Mississippi, giving you an idea of some of the snowfall in this area. As you can see here, it was mostly snow with a sleet snow mix towards the southeast end of the area, and then mostly sleet south of Hattiesburg. And again, amounts as much as 3 to 4 inches, which for this area is highly significant. Break for more. And this is KD1CY continuing on slide number 14. This is some of the snowfall reports from the Alabama area, from the Birmingham Weather Office. Again, widespread 1 to 4 inch totals. On the next slide, we have ice accumulation reports from parts of the Charleston, South Carolina area. You know, quarter to half inch of ice, and even as much as up to an inch of ice, where if it's freezing rain, this could definitely cause issues not only with roads and car accidents, but trees and power lines could also have issues if this is an ice accretion situation and not, you know, a mixture of ice and sleet, where the sleet can actually help mitigate damage to trees and power lines. On the next slide, we talk about, as you get up towards North Carolina, we're seeing snowfall amounts as high as 8 inches in the northeast part of the state, with widespread 3 to 5 inch amounts in the eastern and central parts of the state, and also in the extreme western part of the state. The west central part, and kind of west of Raleigh, and I'll say east of Charlotte, was a little bit of a minimum area where they only had about an inch or two of snow. But again, these are pretty significant amounts of snow for parts of the southeast United States. Break for more. And this is KD1CY continuing with the presentation on winter storms. This is slide number 17, which is just working up past North Carolina into parts of Virginia and into Delaware, where you're seeing, again, the continuation of the higher amounts going into parts of southeast Virginia and then up into southeast Delaware, and then see the amounts start to trail off. And if you kind of expanded this up to the New Jersey area, you saw that the amounts there were only just, you know, a few inches there as the storm kind of continued to shift east. But as you got into southern New England, as we get into the next slide, you see the amounts that I mentioned of about 3 to 7 inches in parts of south coastal Massachusetts and Cape Cod, parts of Rhode Island, basically around a half to 2 inches of snow, with the highest amounts in the extreme southern part of the area. We tend to jet out a bit further east, so as the storm tried to slide out, we caught kind of the edge of the storm, and even, you know, in parts of Cape Cod, they got in Nantucket, they got into a little bit of the heavier part of the storm before the storm departed with some of those 6 and 7 inch snowfall amounts. And this is a Facebook graphic from the Weather Service in Taunton. Break for more. This is KD1CY continuing on slide number 19, and let's talk a little bit, we touched on it, about measuring snow and ice. So to measure snow and or sleet, you want to find a flat surface that is not subjected to blowing and drifting snow when that's possible, and try to avoid the drifts and bare spots. Now, in a blizzard or near blizzard scenario, this is very difficult to do. So I know what I do is I'll try to find that flat surface, take a bunch of measurements there, then I will also take a measurement of the drift and look at the area that's bare as kind of the high and low marks, and then kind of take as up to 10 measurements and average that value, and then round to the nearest tenth of an inch. And that gives us a pretty good, reliable prediction of the snowfall. For the ice accretion, where we just have freezing rain that's accreting on surfaces, best way to measure that is to take a tree branch and take a ruler and kind of look at how much that ice protrudes from that tree branch. in one direction, or as we say, radially. There is a whole guideline on snow measurement techniques that's done by co-op observers, and that link has been provided. That also talks about how to melt the snow into water, which gets us into some of the things many folks have heard of about, you know, snow-to-water ratios. So for every inch of water is 10 inches of snow, but sometimes when it's very cold, we can get ratios of 20 or even, you know, almost 30 to 1, meaning 20 inches or 30 inches of snow to 1 inch of water. When it gets really cold and we're getting that really drier, fluffier snow that can accumulate much deeper, but it can be less of an impact, say, on trees and power lines if there's going to be wind and it's not as heavy of a snow falling on trees and wires. Break for more. And this is KD1CY continuing on slide number 20. So we mentioned the measuring of snow and ice and such, and you know, again, we really have done a great job of talking about amateur radio from the perspective of being there when all else fails. But as time evolves here, we have another mission that I think is equally as important, and that is the ability to gather quality situational awareness information. How much snow is falling? How much ice is accumulating? You know, damage at your specific location, if there is any, that you've lost power. You know, maybe one or two individual reports aren't significant, but when you have a whole network of reports, it can paint a picture of what's going on out there for emergency management folks, for the media, for non-governmental organizations, and not just the Weather Service from a meteorological perspective. They're certainly very important in that, in a weather situation. And during winter storms and winter weather-related incidents, you know, especially I think in the southeast U.S., but even in certain situations up here in the north, you know, knowing about, you know, weather-related accidents, traffic jams, especially very serious ones that are delaying things, are very important for all of the agencies, even the Weather Service, emergency management, and such, to know about that information. Damage and power outages, as we've mentioned, that can be from winds of a hurricane or winds of a winter storm. And supporting and helping manage other social media outlets. So I think the Twitter and Facebook expansion of information is very helpful and important, but there's also some bad information out there. So being able to look at that information, vet out the good information from the bad, and compare it to what's coming in from our amateur radio network can be very, very helpful. And we definitely encourage local Skywarn groups to obtain a Facebook page, a Twitter handle. We have one for the VOIP Hurricane Net. We have one for our Skywarn operations at WX1BOX under our amateur radio call sign. Break for more. And continuing on the situational awareness disaster intelligence information slide, you know, to give you an idea of how the social media aspect has evolved, our Weather Service in Taunton has their Facebook and Twitter handles, and they've gone as far as to say, when you're giving reports onto our Twitter, Facebook handle, make sure you include the WX1BOX Twitter handle as well, so that, you know, either way, both can make sure that they're monitoring and capturing the data as it comes in. So that's, you know, and that happened in the last couple of storms, and it did net some additional information. And, you know, as mentioned in an ARRL article a couple of years back now, FEMA's Craig Fugate has mentioned how amateur radio operators are the inventors of social media. And, you know, that one time the amateur radio networks were the best way to get, you know, kind of information from other areas. And now, of course, we have Twitter and Facebook. I think a future aspect of emergency communication is our continued networks that create this information, and also that we manage this information via the Twitter and Facebook social media outlets. As I mentioned, there's some great data there. There's some not-so-good data there, and being able to help vet that can be important. And also, it's a way to get our word out about what amateur radio can do and could potentially lead to new amateur radio operators. So really a point where I know we've mentioned many times on this net in the past, and it's a good time to kind of reiterate it here in this presentation. Break for more. And this is KD1CY continuing now on slide 22, which is on winter weather safety tips. I mentioned a handful of tips here, and I'll mention a couple of others that Lloyd, KC5FM, pointed out. Certainly you want to assure your car is winterized before entering the winter season. having a winter storm survival kit, some non-perishable goods in case you're stuck somewhere, a blanket and such, very, very important. And you want to dress in layers during the winter versus one large winter jacket to stay warm. The layers do a much better job of keeping you warm, and then if you're too warm, you can kind of shed the layers as you see fit. Certainly knowing the difference between winter storm watches, warnings, and advisories, and they vary across different parts of the country. You know, a winter storm warning gets issued in the southeast U.S. for 1 to 3 inches of snow. That won't even prompt an advisory up here in the north because, you know, it's of the conditions are easier to handle up here due to folks training as well as the ability to treat the roads in that situation more easily. So knowing that information is important. Some of the useful winter weather resources are available from the Weather Service, the Winter Weather Preparedness website. Link is there, the Winter Storm Tips pamphlet, and also the NOAA National Weather Service weather terms on the different watches, warnings, and advisories. On the Winter Weather Preparedness website, there's also the Red Cross Winter Storm link, which is very useful. I wanted to mention that per Lloyd's direction. And then keeping your cell phone charged, having a car charger, other means to keep things charged. If you have a spare battery for your phone, if your phone has the capability to have swappable batteries, having that available and charged up is very useful as well. And certainly that same goes true for your amateur radio gear as well. Break for more. And this is KD1CY continuing on slide number 23. We'll talk about the kind of this upcoming active winter weather pattern. Certainly across the north central and northeast U.S., at least to start, there's going to be the potential for wintry weather. Southern areas, especially down in the southeast U.S., should stay warmer with potential rain events, but as time goes on, that will change. As Lloyd mentioned to me, winter storm watches are up for the Oklahoma area, so Daryl has mentioned some potential for winter weather in Arkansas over the next week, so we kind of are still in winter, and even southern areas will have to watch some of these storms. One major storm system will affect portions of the area starting in the next couple of days. And we'll start to get up here into New England around the Tuesday, February 4th, Wednesday, February 5th time frame. There's another potential storm that's create a lot of hype for next weekend, but way too early to tell. There's a possibility of something there. We'll see. And the even longer range models are saying additional storms the week of February 9th. And basically what we can discern once you get out past 3 or 5 days is that there's an active pattern, but we can't get into specific details. Even getting out 3 to 5 days and mentioning some details is difficult, but the precision is starting to get there with even the 3 to 5 day outlooks. But beyond that, other than knowing it's active, not much else you can determine. So stay monitoring the Weather Service and reputable media and even reputable social media outlets for further information, and remain prepared for any storm season with a personal safety preparedness kit as well as an amateur radio go kit for all seasons. Break for more. And this is KD1CY for the last slide in the presentation. We'll warm ourselves up a little bit and talk a little bit about an announcement for the National Hurricane Center this week about a new storm surge map product for the 2014 Atlantic hurricane season. And this is in response to the growing need per the emergency management and broadcast meteorological community to be able to show graphically where storm surge is going to affect, and where the inundation will be and how high above ground the water could reach in those areas. And it's a lot easier to describe that with a visual map. The graphic will be issued with each full advisory package, and that gets issued during tropical storms and hurricanes within 6 hours, on 6-hour intervals. And this storm surge map will be issued on the initial hurricane watch issuance and points forward, and possibly on the initial issuance of a tropical storm watch. So if there are no watches in effect, this map won't be available, but as soon as especially a hurricane watch, but even in some cases a tropical storm watch is issued, this map product will be instituted. And the complete announcement and a sample storm surge graphic can be seen on the link here in the storm surge map. Break for more. And this is KD1CY continuing. I think I mentioned that the previous slide was the last one. This is the last slide here, and it's just some key website resources for the presentation. I credit the link from the Peachtree, Georgia office, which gives kind of the timeline of their watches, warnings, and advisories, some of the meteorology and some of the reports received during the storm. I'd like to encourage amateur radio operators and Sky One weather spotters that use Facebook and Twitter to like their Facebook page for the Weather Service office of their area and follow their Twitter feed. They provide graphics and images that aren't always available on their website, and you can also check their local Weather Service office website. A lot of them are listing at least their Facebook page or feed on there. If you don't know what it is, you should be able to get it off their website. We mentioned some of the other website resources, you know, across the presentation as well. So that concludes tonight's presentation on winter storms and winter weather safety tips. Hopefully we went at a decent speed, but not too fast. And I want to thank everyone, a great turnout for the net for this presentation. So with that, we'll open up the floor to any questions or quick comments on the presentation this evening, and we'll field those. And then once we're done, we'll turn it back to Daryl for a final check of check-ins and read off the text box check-ins. KD1CY, any questions or comments on the winter storm presentation this evening?
Kilo Charlie 5, Foxtrot Mike, over.
110 RDS, question.
Okay, we have KC5FM and N1LWS. KC5FM, Lloyd, go ahead.
And this is KC5FM. Good presentation. Appreciate that. Looking forward to spring storm convective type stuff. The National Weather Service office in Norman is doing some webinars. These are publicly available webinars. Look at weather.gov/Norman. That's weather.gov/Norman. And look in the Skywarn training link on that page, and you can get some online Skywarn training, courtesy of your friends at the National Weather Service office and Norman, KC5FM. Thanks for the presentation, Daryl, over. Rob, over.
All right, Lloyd, very good, and thanks for passing along that link from the Norman office. Certainly could be useful, and appreciate you being on the net tonight. Let me pass it over to Larry, N1LWS, one of our spotters up here in western Massachusetts. Go ahead, Larry, with your question.
Rob, thank you. This is N1LWS. Good presentation. This is the first one I've been able to attend. I came across an old listing of Skywarn frequencies for New England. I do a lot of traveling in the area. Should I try to rely on that listing or just go ahead and continue to use the Twitter when I end up having to when I run into something that I need to report, but I don't have a frequency there available?
All right, very good. Well, the Twitter feed, as you know, Larry, works. Also, if you go to southern New England, we do have on the WX1BOX.org website, we do have that southern New England frequency list. For winter storms, I kind of tries to follow. We try to set up a schedule of nets. Sometimes just simply leaving your radio on for your area, the 14694 repeater, just leaving it on and monitoring. You can run into kind of a first scheduled net, and then they will be run kind of on 1 or 2 hour intervals, depending on how things go during a winter storm situation. Certainly in the spring and summer, when severe thunderstorm activity can kind of pop up at any time, you kind of just try to guard your Skywarn frequency for a possible net call-up. That's the best way to go about it. We try to run things fairly informally unless we're in a really significant situation up here. Then we will run it more formally. Like June 1st, we were very formal. June 1st, 2011, that was a tornado outbreak here in Massachusetts, a very rare one. And we had the nets up kind of formally there. And we could certainly, feel free to ask some questions offline to me, Larry. I think you have my email addresses. If not, I will post that in the text box. So thanks for monitoring tonight's presentation. And let me open it up for any more questions or comments on the winter storm presentation this evening. KD1CY.
At WB8REI, Jeff and Tiffin with a comment.
Go ahead, Jeff. WB8REI, KD1CY. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Rob. Well, wonderful presentation. Really, really informative. What I really liked, Rob, is not only the ability to go to the link and follow along with the PDF PowerPoint, which really, really made it flow along really smoothly. I really liked some of the ideas that you brought up here. Gave myself some ideas to maybe incorporate into our own Skywarm program here. I really liked the one about, in concert with Mr. Fugate's statement about us being inventors of social media, how important and valuable that is to create a Facebook or Twitter handle and use our Skywarm groups to kind of manage that information. It's something I'd not really thought about too much here in our local Skywarm group, but I think we're going to talk a little bit more about that and see if we can't maybe work that into our Skywarm program here a little bit more. Just a great great point you made here in the presentation. I really liked it. Got me thinking quite a bit. Good job, Rob, and really enjoyed it. WB8REI, back to you.
Well, thanks very much, Jeff. I'm glad that it'll be helpful for your area. And, you know, I tell you, I mean, up in our area, I mean, especially with our state emergency management folks, this is the piece that they find very, very useful for their operations, and they find this to be, you know, the biggest value that amateur radio brings. Now, certainly we know things will fail. I don't care how much communication support gets put in. You know, you will get to that kind of last line of defense that amateur radio is, as Craig Fugate mentioned as well. But having, you know, kind of doing this other aspect keeps groups more active, keeps you active during the storm situation, and then if things do fail, you're kind of that much more prepared. So that's kind of the you know philosophy that, you know, we've done here in the last few years, because we, you know, we've had a few instances of when all else fails or when a lot of things fail, not necessarily everything, and it's been helpful in those areas that we've been active. So with that, I'll put out one more call for any questions or comments this evening. Before we wrap up the net, we'll go through the text box check-ins and make another last call for voice check-ins. But any last questions or comments on the presentation this evening? KB1CY.
KB2ZLA.
Go ahead, Marshall, KB2ZLA.
Hey, good evening to all. First, a local note of interest to those in the New Jersey and surrounding areas. A winter storm watch is in effect for areas of southern New Jersey, from the Delaware to coastal New Jersey, where up to half a foot of snow is possible starting Sunday night, as late as into Monday afternoon. Now, you mentioned things that contribute locally to very higher amounts of snow. It's a combination of two things which most people don't realize is, number one, when you get extremely cold local area, the air just cannot hold the moisture. So, number one, it's got to lose what it's got. And number two, the ice crystals in the snow freeze up. You get that light powdery stuff. So those are two of the conditions that I tell people, it's a combination of them that lead to extremely high snowfall amounts locally.
Yes, that is very true. That kind of fluff factor that wrings out the moisture and such is absolutely a factor in some of the heavier snowfall totals, especially with these colder systems, especially that we've had in this past month of January 2014. So. No, very good, Marshall, and thanks for mentioning the comments there in New Jersey with that Monday storm, which that one looks like it may stay south of our area. That's the hope. So we'll make one last call here for any questions or comments on tonight's presentation, and then we'll wrap up the net here. So this will be the final call for any questions or comments on tonight's winter storm presentation. KD1CY. All right, Joe, N5OZG. Go ahead, Joe, with your comments, and we'll make yours the final comments on the presentation.
Hey, Rob, you really sounded really good. It was a really good presentation. I just want to add, you know, I'm sure everyone knows, you don't ever underestimate a storm, a winter storm, or even a hurricane. We all knew about Hurricane Isaac. It's just a category one storm, even though the city of New Orleans came out pretty good, the suburbs, parts of the suburbs really got flame if there's a slow-moving storm or basically Isaac stalled. So Isaac pushed a lot more water than was expected into the land. And just as you know, we actually activated our weather net, I guess 6 hours after I emailed, after you emailed me, we activated it, and it wasn't terribly bad. They closed our light and the bridges down here in the New Orleans suburb. All right, that's it. N5, we're usually clear.
Yes, that's a very good point, Joe. You know, all storms are very different. And if you look at Isaac, yes, it was a Category 1 storm, but it was one that kind of stalled out just to the south of where Joe was, and it kind of allowed that surge to build and so forth, and it caused a lot more damage than you think a Category 1 would when you think of it as being supposedly a minimal hurricane. Same thing later that year with Hurricane Sandy, which was a Category 1, hurricane, not getting into the debate whether it was tropical or not when it approached the coast. It was a huge system, huge envelope, it produced hurricane-force wind gusts from our part of south coastal New England through with the main thrust over the New York City, Long Island, and New Jersey area. And a huge area of coverage, tremendous storm surge, and then tremendous wind damage. Even though it was a minimal Cat 1 because it was such a long duration of winds because it was such a large system. So, you got to watch these things. Each storm kind of has their own thing, and while there may be some parallels to a past storm, they don't always equate exactly. So we'll round that out with that being the last comment. Thank you, Joe. Thank everybody for all the good compliments and comments and questions tonight for tonight's presentation. We'll hopefully do this again in March. Hopefully we're not talking about a bunch of February winter storms, but we may very well be doing that. We'll see if that'll be our next presentation or not. I'm going to turn it over to Daryl to try to take a couple of final rolls of voice check-ins. We'll run through the text box check-ins and wrap it up for tonight's net. So pass it over to Daryl. Thanks again, Daryl, for being primary NCO tonight. WX1DER, KD1CY.